Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have Avery and myself, Ange. We're going to talk about Avery's most recent article on how to make death matter, primarily in games where resurrection is an option in the mechanics or the setting. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Since we're talking about character death, Avery, tell us about the most dramatic character death you've ever played out, but also the most ignoble and ridiculous character death you've ever experienced.
Oh, goodness. So most dramatic character death was probably played an Exalted game. My poor Solar Exalt got her heart ripped out of her chest and thrown in her face by a Death Knight. That was unfortunate.
Oh, man.
Actually, that is part of what inspired this thing, because we did a whole quest to get her back after that. Ignoble. I don't have a lot of ridiculous ones. I think the most ignoble is when my character panicked, tapped into a secret spy network to try to get people to help her, drug the spy network out into the light, destroyed a whole bunch of stuff that had been built up for months and months and months, and did end up not dying, but went blind and got exiled.
Oh, man.
That was pretty ignoble.
That is pretty ignoble and pretty bad way to go for a character.
Yes. So how about you, Ange? What's the most dramatic character death and ignoble one?
I can't think of a campaign where I had a good, you know, dramatic character death, but there was a one-shot. My friend Heather ran a Call of Cthulhu game, which I normally don't enjoy, but I like the premise of this game enough that I gave it a try. Mm-hmm. She basically took the musical Hair and combined it with Call of Cthulhu.
Okay, yeah, I'd have to play that too. I'm not a Cthulhu fan, but that sounds awesome.
We were basically playing the kids in the musical, mm-hmm. and ended up going on this whole trippy trip thing that ended up being us manipulated by one elder god to stop another elder god who was using Richard Nixon as his... Yeah, using Richard Nixon as his means of taking over the world. And my character chose to sacrifice herself to stop the man.
There you go.
Literally, my sacrifice caused Watergate.
Oh, oh, that sounds so much fun. I love it when games successfully, like, take historical stuff and was able to integrate them. That's great.
Yeah, and she had a great soundtrack for it and everything.
Oh, yay! I love it. That's so great.
It was really, really good. I highly recommend if you're ever at a con and you see Rogue Cthulhu and Heather Ferris is running a game, give one of her games a try, because she's a great GM.
Okay, will do.
The most ignoble death is probably the reason why I always had a problem with character death. It was way, way back in when I was first playing first edition D&D, just out of high school, and somehow the whole party triggered a pit trap, and everyone fell into the pit trap, and the GM was like, okay, game over, you're all dead. It's just pit trap. We just fell to the bottom of the pit. There's no spikes or anything, is there? And he's like, no, but there's no way to get out of it. And I'm like, what do you mean there's no way to get out of it? There's four of us down here. We can figure something out. Nope, the module says right here, there is no way to get out of this unless somebody lowers a rope to you. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. But that was the end of my very favorite magic user, rogue, bard wannabe character that I had fallen in love with.
Oh, so instead of rocks fall, everyone dies, it was party falls, everyone dies. Oh.
Yep, pretty much.
That's quite unfortunate. I like how you already, though, were thinking of creative role-playing solutions back in D&D First Edition. That's good. That's a good sign.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts and feels about some of the frustrations that happened during those early days of gaming that still fuel me today.
Well, we're all thankful for it, for your good articles that come out, so.
Why, thank you. So, getting into our topic of discussion, when character death can be circumvented by a spell or ability, it can cheapen the impact of the danger the characters are facing. So if you can just show up at the local temple with a dead body and enough gold, how do you make death seem like a viable threat? And this is what your article went into. So can you give us a summary of what you talked about?
Indeed. So basically my thesis was, as you said, that when you can just come back to life and you don't have to deal with any of the consequences, right? The worst that you might have is a hit to the party coin chest, then it doesn't matter, right? Like, it sucks, maybe. Maybe you get upset that you failed your role, but in terms of a role-playing thing, meh, it's nothing. It tends to get brushed over. So,
yeah,
I went into some other solutions that I think could work without changing the rules of the system, per se, and things that where you could do little tweaks to this, either the system or the setting, to make it work without totally removing resurrection. Because, you know, I like the option to bring characters back if someone's really into them, if they haven't finished their story out. You know, there's inappropriate times for a character to die, and I like having that little, like, exit hatch. I just want it to be something that I don't want to pull if I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if the GM and the players treat it with some seriousness and respect, it can add to the story. But if it's just it's just another role and it's a mechanic, it's like hitting the reset button on your video game. That's eh.
Exactly.
That cheapens it. But I think it can be used very well.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of times it does get defaulted to the mechanic thing because, you know, especially if it's an accident, people might be upset, or, you know, it might be like in the span of the moment, the GM doesn't know what to do, and sort of we slip out of character and into a metagame option as we deal with those issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, preparing beforehand with some ideas about how you can do things is what it's all about.
So let's talk about turning it into a quest.
Okay.
What are your semi, you know, because you referenced the whole Orpheus myth.
Yeah.
In that section of the article. And let's talk about what you can use there to make this more interesting for all the players.
Very basic version of the Orpheus myth. Eurydice dies. She's bitten by the snake. She goes to hell. Orpheus is like, ain't cool. I'm going to go get her. Does all this stuff, makes it down there. You know, he uses his good example of a bard being very, very heroic. He uses his lyre for a lot of good. I think he the version that I read at the very least, he put Cerberus to sleep using his lyre and enchanted and charmed Hades himself so that Hades said, okay, you can bring back Eurydice. Except you can't, while you're crawling out of here, look behind you. You have to trust she's there. If you look behind you, she's lost forever. Which, of course, Orpheus does. Sad end.
This is a Greek myth. This is what happens. Even the comedies are tragic.
Yes, exactly. So, hopefully your characters won't do something like look behind them. But I really like the idea of that descent into the underworld to go fetch your person. And it goes back to that character death that I talked about in the intro. We went months into heading into the underworld. We actually ended up becoming death knights ourselves in a horrible, like, you have to experience the thing to be able to get out of it scenario. It was a huge part of our story.
And there's nothing to say that the gods of the game may not decide to say, no, we're not going to give this to you so easily. You need to do this.
Yeah.
To bring them back.
To actually give them challenges. And, you know, those challenges can be stuff that the party really likes to do. You know, it can be for fun. You can have them, you know, running through an arena with undead or whatever your case may be. Or it can be more challenging, you know, like, do this very evil act or deliver me this amount of souls in exchange or, And then you have to figure out, you know, what either a way around that or how far your character is willing to go.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of torturous solutions for my poor players. So.
Yeah. I have heard this of your games.
What do you mean I'm the TPK queen?
So what about the second part, playing up the personal ramifications of death and resurrection through the actual role play? Because sure, you brought her back, but now what?
This is something that as a GM, I'd actually sit down with a player being like, okay, your character's coming back. Let's role play through those first few moments of coming back to life. What's happening? You know, how are you feeling? Is it immediate? Is it like going under like twilight anesthesia where one second you're having your head cut off and the next second you're back? Or was there something on the other side? Can you remember it? Can you not?
Yeah.
And then once we've got that background, I think that's something that the player can run with. And as a GM, I'd want to encourage them to run with that. But at that point, it's kind of in their hands what their character would do and how it'd fall out.
My friend Jen, who's at Pixelscapes on Twitter, she had an interesting situation of this come up in her D&D game. This one character had been keeping this one particular secret for 18 levels.
Oh my goodness.
She'd been role-playing it fantastically, whereas if you looked back, you'd be like, oh, I see now. But she hadn't let anyone in on the secret, except for an NPC, mm-hmm. which, as Jen felt, was like, well, that doesn't really help the other players. Mm-hmm. So when this character, Lorna, ended up getting killed in a fight and was resurrected, she was resurrected briefly back into her true form, which was a blue dragon.
Oh, dear.
It was this situation where at the start of the campaign, they decided that this blue dragon and this barbarian woman who was devoted to the blue dragon were both dying. And Bahamut came down to them and said, there's too much work to still be done. I cannot save your body, the dragon, but I can save the human's body. Are you willing to join together and fight Tiamat together? And it was like, sure. So Lorna has secretly been being driven by this blue dragon this whole time. But none of us knew until that resurrection moment, which revealed the secret to everyone and was like, oh, that explains so much. And of course, my character being the blue dragonborn and a smartass was like, oh, so I'm not the only big blue bitch around here.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a perfect example of what we're talking about. How to make things work for you. I don't know. She probably had some other kind of, well, maybe she didn't. Maybe she had no other way that she was going to reveal the secret. What a good way to roll with the dice to make sure that you've got some good story.
Yeah. And it's one of the great things about that campaign is little things like that turn into these great story moments.
Opportunities. That's what they are. You got to think of them as opportunities, not just bad luck.
So, moving on to the next bit, how society views the Risen. What are the cultural repercussions? What were your intentions on that section of the article?
Well, I wanted to talk about ways in which, if you think about a society where people come back to life, what would that mean? What does it mean in different settings? You know, it's very different if you're playing a science fiction game where maybe people get uploaded and downloaded all the time. Then it really is no big deal. Or what happens in a fantasy scenario where you're not undead, but you're returned to life? Do you have a religion that thinks that's weird? Do you have this split between classes where the wealthy and nobles can get brought back, but the peasants can't? What does that mean for how nobles would treat peasants and how peasants would think of nobles and how peasants would think of themselves? Like, would they think of themselves as less human, as less commodities? Explodes out all over a culture. You know, it's rarely just, unless you just hand wave it, those sort of spells are going to have such a huge impact that that's one way you can explore making it interesting.
I do think that if you're going to go that route, it's important to have that up front with the players before you come to that situation.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Explain the attitudes of the populace.
Absolutely.
Towards this type of stuff, so that when they come face to face to it, they're prepared for those ramifications.
This is not a thing where on the fly a character dies and you're like, oh crap, okay, I gotta think of something. I would go with other solutions in that case.
Right.
Unless you're in a scenario where you might not know that, like if you're on an alien planet or something like that. And then that becomes a whole new opportunity for quests and roleplay as the character's like, oops, we just really messed that up.
It reminds me a little of, there's the Pozzlane series by John Ringo. It's science fiction. Earth has been invaded by this other race. Other aliens came down to help us, but they have their own secrets and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. And in one of the offshoot series of this, there's a character who, she's like, some people have been given the advantage of this rejuvenation mm-hmm. Serum thing, which basically puts their body back to its healthiest state, you know, that about 30 years old, perfect condition, all this, and it grants them a lot of longevity. And like one of the things in the main series that happens is they go to a lot of the older soldiers and offer this to them so that they can fight in the war. And in this offshoot series about this other character, she has been given this, and she comes face to face with the prejudice of the average person who views it as an abomination.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an interesting way and a reason to keep that particular aspect of herself secret.
Yeah, that's a great example. I thought of it specifically because the game that I'm planning to run, I wanted to do some cultural stuff with it and have it be a very big taboo, right? But that you could still get it on the black market, which would mean that the people were coming back were the people who were either willing to go to that black market or supplied it, criminals and like. So that led to when someone who's viewed as a criminal dies, you basically desecrate that body. Like you find it, you destroy their corpse. Because otherwise you're going to have that villain that pops up again and again and again and again because he's willing to go pay the awful price.
So the next option was just make it really costly.
Yeah.
And I think this is what the, at least in D&D and Pathfinder, is generally intended for mm-hmm. those spells. But it doesn't always get, you know, by the time characters are high level, they've got so much gold already that it's nothing to throw some money at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is still something to treat as a rare commodity.
And I think that scaling it up with the players might be a little good metagame way to do it. Though that is something that would be very upfront with, again, at the beginning of the campaign, that as you go along, resurrection is going to get more expensive.
You know, you could even tie it to something like the higher a level you are, the more expensive it is.
Bingo. And you could even tie it in world-wise that, you know, you have all this more experience and power as a character. That's harder for the gods to return to you. So, you know, costs more. There's also the option of making it cost things other than just money. You could have it cost, you know, gems or a magical item or something to that, so that they really have to think about, you know, what are we going to put aside in case one of us dies? What would we lose? It's not just a, meh, okay, we have it. Let's do it. It's done.
Yeah. Reset button, move on.
Exactly.
And then the final option you discussed was just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Yeah. Just let it happen. This ties really well, I think, the cultural one, that, like, if it does just happen, you can explore it. And if it's not, maybe there's something, maybe that's the plot that you can run, is something goes wrong and they have to figure out why. You know, what happens to a person's personal, like, sense of safety and fear, because we're animals, right? We've got that animal brain constantly telling us, like, oh my god, you're going to die, you're going to die, you're going to die. What happens when you know that's not the case? Like, adventurers just going out and being like, I messed that up. Kill myself. We'll come back and do this again.
One of my favorite superhero concepts is the character that has regeneration and, I forget what the power is, but it's basically like you die, you're going to come back to life, you know? And it's like the total recklessness and adrenaline junkie that that would create, you know, the character who's like, I'm going to see what it's like to jump out of an airplane without a parachute because I can.
That urge that tells me, hey, just drive your car off the road. It'll be fine. Yeah, I'm going to follow that. Let's find out what happens. And imagine your whole, not only your whole party being those kind of adrenaline junkies, but the whole world. I mean, if it's available to everyone, no one has it anymore. What? that's going to have some repercussions. Or not.
Yeah,
if you don't want it to, if you don't want death to be a thing, you know, you don't have to. It's your game. If you don't want to lay that out and say character death's a possibility, there are all sorts of other ways that you can up the ante for your players and make things feel important without having your characters be gone forever and die and you know, have to have be recover.
Without being left in a pit.
Exactly. Oh, your poor pit. Starving to death. Just so sad. See, this is the horror person in me. I would want to go into the whole role play of what it's like to starve to death with your fellows. Did you eat each other? I bet you ate each other, sort of thing. But
I seem to remember somebody in the party was a werebear.
Oh, yeah.
So
no.
I'm sure that people got eaten.
You all got eaten. Totally. Yeah, that's why I run Dread a lot. So
it's all going to end horribly anyway.
Exactly. Let's have some gross fun in the meantime.
Are there any last comments you wanna say on this? Or I think we've covered most everything.
Yeah, I think we've gotten through stuff. I don't really have anything in particular. I mean, you can look to a lot of novels. You can look to mythology. There's all sorts of ways that people have come back from the dead and all sorts of things that discuss, you know, what would be like religious consequences, what would be cultural consequences. Go out there, do the thing that all GMs do, where you steal a little bit from here, and let's pluck a little bit from here, and you can craft something that's really cool.
Yeah, just drop a Miracle Max in your game and have the character just be mostly dead.
Exactly! Maybe their pieces fall off once in a while, and they gotta just kind of put them back on there.
So, wrapping this up, let's give special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome GNOME supporters like Anthony Macabronis, Eric Heimel, and Suzanne Cabral.
Y'all are awesome. Thank you!
Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the GNOME Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the GNOME Stew website to the GNOME Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Healing Potions Are Us, that thing you're going to need to avoid character death in the first place. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Avery, where else can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at my website, www.chanticostudios.com. That's C-H-A-N-T-I-C-O. And that's pretty much it. I do actually, no, that's not true. I have a Facebook that's under the same name that you can look at my art and the like on. And I do have a Twitter handle that is once again the same.
And I highly recommend looking up Avery's art. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you very, very much. She only says that because she's got a couple pieces.
I do.
I guess kind of sells that the same way. I didn't quite mean it that way, but whatever. Sure. Okay.
I say it because I like it.
Thank you.
And you can find me on Twitter at Orikez13, and usually hanging around in various online communities and stuff. So, Avery, do you think we avoided the stew this week?
I hope so. And you know what? If we didn't, maybe there's some kind of solution we can come to.
Just a little bit of resurrection.